But my dad always used to take 25% of my income. And he said, I'm not taking it from you, I'm investing it for you. When I first started investing, I had 70% in the stock market and 30% in income securities. I always had income purpose securities.
One of the most important things I've learned in my life is that a person can achieve all their goals, they can be wealthy, and still not be fully free. As I climbed the wealth ladder and grew a company that was one of the most successful real estate investment companies of its kind here in St. Louis, Missouri, on the outside, I had everything I had dreamed of. The beautiful wife, nicer car than I thought I'd drive, nicer home, beautiful kids. And yet, on the inside, I didn't really feel any different. I still felt, quite frankly, like a slave. I was chasing money. I was chasing my next goal. And when I hit the goal, I wouldn't take the time to celebrate it. And I didn't know how to fully enjoy the journey along the way. So as I've aged, I've gotten curious, how do we make our entire lives wealthy and not just one component of it? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to interview the guests on this show. And yeah, we're going to talk about what they've done and what their stories are and how they've become financially wealthy. But also, I want to dig into their relationship with money and their relationships with other and if they have more joy and fulfillment than when they started out, or if they don't, and why or why not. So thanks for tuning in. We got a great guest coming for you. Let's get started. Hey guys, Jim Manning here with another episode of the Passive Wealth Show. I'm here with Steven Selengut and thrilled to have him on here. So Steve is a seasoned investment manager and advisor with over 44 years of experience in the financial industry. He specializes in creating high income portfolio for his clients is what he did over the years. He got up to over $110 million of portfolios collectively with his clients and ended up writing a couple books as well. So he has a book called The Retirement Money Secrets and The Brainwashing of the American Investor. And Steve and I were kind of just talking before this and talking about how aligned we are and how building wealth and how important it is to generate income from our investments so that one day our investments can work for us and so that we don't have to, right? So Steve, welcome. I appreciate having you on. And how'd ChatGPT do on the background? That's where I got that information from. What do you think?
It was pretty close. No, it was good.
Oh man. So, So tell me a little bit about how you got started into income and I think it goes all the way back to, some of the conversations you had with your dad, right?
Oh yeah. It goes way back to, when I was growing up, as a kid, and I guess I was always encouraged to do odd jobs in the summer, mow lawns and do things like that to generate some income, but, to spend. Gas for the boat, stuff like that. But my dad always used to take 25% of my income. And he said, I'm not taking it from you, I'm investing it for you. And I want you to get used to the idea of putting money away. So that's how we operated. And he told me about how he ran his business. And we talked a lot about that because I think he really, like most dads, wanted to get their sons involved. And he was in a real estate business, interestingly enough. He was a builder, developer, and he had what you would call a vertically integrated business. If any of you have taken Economics 101, I guess, would have taught that. He owned everything from the lumber yard that supplied his contractors to the land, the homes. He had an insurance company that would insure the properties. He took back the mortgages. So he was like a little private bank of his own, just totally had everything under control. He had rental properties for the summer. We were a community on Lake Opakon in North Jersey. And it was very, those times it was only about 40 minutes from the city, from Manhattan. and they'd have a community there, and everything was there. They had baseball courts, tennis courts, a nice beach and everything. And they all rented from him. And then eventually they'd buy and he'd, rebuild and make it bigger, you know, modify the homes, but he'd take back the mortgages. And like I said, he had that all gone. So his emphasis was that it didn't much matter what people would tell you this property or this home or this location is worth. The important thing was how much money it generated. And he put it in terms like, in order to support your mother in the manner to which she's become accustomed, you gotta have income. So that's what I do. And that's what you should do in your endeavors. Find something that does a lot of income for you. So that's what happened. When I was 25, I was given back all that money I had given him, plus the money I didn't spend on an Ivy League school. And it was a lot of money. And I started investing in 1970 when I was 25. I was commuting to New York, and my objective was to make enough money from my investments so that I could stop commuting to New York. And by the time, by 79, I was making five times my salary in income from trading stocks and, you know, trading stocks and getting the dividends that they paid. I never bought a security that didn't pay some form of income. Just like my dad told me.
Was it tempting to get into your dad's business and kind of take that over? Or tell me the story behind that.
It's really kind of funny because I said to my wife, I said, I can never do that. He works, eight hours a day, every day a week. And when he gets home, he's got to go to planning board meetings and stuff like that. I said, I don't want that kind of job. So what did I do? I went out and I started an investment management business. And what did I do? I worked 8 days a week. I didn't have to go to any planning board meetings or any of that stuff, but I still had to be on top of things all the time. You know, fortunately, the computer world came upon us, and you could start doing your job from all over the world, no matter where you wanted to go. You could still travel and run a business. And if you had trained good people to take care of your methodology, you could leave it in good hands. So I did those two things. And, got to the point where I was managing, like you said, about $110 million in capital for about 140 different families and a couple businesses. But all of them were generating. And as we aged, you know, when I first started investing, I had 70% in the stock market and 30% in income securities. I always had income purpose securities. By the time I sold my business, I had 70% of it in income focused securities, bonds, mortgages, you know, things like that, or rather companies that invested in such things, and only about 30% in the stock market. But using the vehicles that I use, which are not very well, although they're the oldest funds that you can buy, they've been around longer than anything, longer than mutual funds, much longer than ETFs. They're not widely used or widely known in the financial services industry. They're called closed-end funds. You're going to ask me why.
Yeah, why do you think that?
There are a couple of reasons, and it all stems from the fact that they are not the same kind of security as the others. They're trusts. They're pass-through trusts, kind of like a REITs, kind of a trust instrument, right, where it pays out the income. But I don't think it's required, and it is required to pay back most of its income, so it doesn't get taxed, right? It pays out to its shareholders. Well, the trust vehicle of a closed-end fund is the same. It's got to pay 95% of its earned income to its shareholders. So it's not the type of security that can grow in market value like an ordinary stock can. Stocks grow because they reinvest most of their earnings, you know, except the millions that they give to their CEOs. They invest all the rest. They don't give anything to their shareholders until much, much later. And that's how they grow their business. A closed-end fund isn't going to be able to grow in market value because it's not reinvesting anything more than 5% of its earnings. The rest is going to us. So you can have a portfolio that contains all the most popular stocks in the world. You can go down the list of the most active, you get Microsoft, NVIDIA, Amazon, Google, all of them. And you can buy 100 different closed-end funds that contain every one of those stocks and hundreds more in a closed-end fund. Instead of paying 0% interest like they do, it pays almost 9% in income because it's all going to you. They're not trying to grow. So that's the big distinction between those.
Yeah. So then the financial advisor, so the typical one will make 1% or whatever it is.
Yeah.
They all charge a different fee.
Right.
But of the total assets under management. So,
right.
So,
and the closed end funds aren't.
They're making less money than.
Exactly.
Then if the stock prices continue to go up,
they're going
to make a higher percentage on the fees. So,
yeah.
So that would make sense why they don't promote them as much from just a financial standpoint, right?
From the, yeah.
So what about so let's just put devil's advocate hat on here and say, well, I think it's better for Google to and these other companies to reinvest because it's going to be a more efficient mechanism than just paying out, you know, if they reinvest and they continue to grow it rather than paying out the income. And I think it can be a little bit more efficient and my net worth could be a lot higher than doing this income approach over time. What are your thoughts on that or any other reasons why?
I'm loving it when the market goes up, you know, because the closed end funds own the same securities, the same Google's inside your, you know, in your pocket that you own the individual shares of. It's in my pocket as well, because I have it in these 15 different closed end funds. So if it goes up and the market goes along with it, like over this past year, the equities, particularly the tech sector's up significantly more than the, you know, NASDAQ's up much more percentage-wise than the Dow is right now. In the last, since March, the Dow's only hit 5 new highs. The NASDAQ's hit 17 new highs. I mean, that's where all the money is going now. Well, my closed-end funds are going up as well, and I'm taking profits on them, and I'm putting it back into other closed-end funds. So yeah, I'm really happy when Google goes crazy. I love it. And NVIDIA right now is putting a lot of money in my pocket and profits. The closed-end funds own them and they trade them. You know, they'll take profits, they'll reinvest again if it dips, and they'll do it over and over again. And every time they take a profit, they got to give it to the shareholders. So yes, we love the stock market. I mean, you know, and for some of my younger clients and younger coaching clients, you know, I totally encourage them to put, you know, up to 50 or 60% of their assets in equity closed end funds and appreciate the growth that comes along with it. But there's no reason why, if you can have that growth and have the income as well, why not? You know, no, it's not going to be spectacular growth. You're not going to go up 80% or 90% or even 20% a year. But when time comes where you need to spend that money for your kids' education, you're not going to have to sell it then and take the capital gains taxes on it. You're going to have the income generated that you can put away for that kid's education. I mean, I'm right now, I was talking to a guy that we said, okay, your oldest is going to start school in September, you know, start putting it away now, you know, get that 60 grand ready now, put away 10,000 a month from your income And you're not going to sell any securities to pay for that education. And I think that's where you want to be. That's how, that's where I was with my kids. You know, my income from investing, and this was even before I became involved in closed-end funds. I've always been involved in dividend stocks, is what they're called now, and I've always been trading them. So I've always had two streams of income, the dividends and the capital gains. And that's what I put aside for my kids' educations. And this was even before I had discovered, or before I went whole hog into closed-end funds.
Well, that's fantastic. So, tell me a little bit more on the structure then, like if you're open to sharing when, with your kids' college education and like what you're able to do. So basically, you didn't pay for it with cash. You just decided to get a loan on the education and then have the income coming in, or did you have enough income coming in?
No, I had enough.
Stroke the bill for the year. Kind of on day one
I had enough income coming in that I could set it aside in advance and pay. I had set up Uniform Gift to Minors Act portfolio. So I had put this money aside for them for years and years, which I think is a very smart thing to do because separate taxpayer and everything. And I had plenty. And of course, sometimes there's a monkey wrench and a child might decide that they want to be a competitive horse person. Mm-hmm. And it eats up some of that college fund and they are forced to make a big decision when they graduate high school and stuff like that. Well, you're either going to be in the horse business or you can go to college, you know, you got a choice. But if you start early enough, I mean, if you've got a good job and you just start in a family and you start putting money away with income, like the closed-end fund, right now they're yielding 10%. But let's say the normal yield back is 7% or 8%. Still, at 7.5%, your money will double every 10 years. You know, so you're putting money away and adding to that and have the income growing and you're adding to it. You can put enough aside for an education. You don't want to have to sell that NVIDIA and take a hit on the taxes. You know, you want to buy and sell NVIDIA 20 times on the way up. That's the way I would go about doing it and diversify in between.
So how much time do you, is this like a full-time job if you want to do this or is it part-time?
If it is, if you want to manage it for 100 people. No, for me, I spend an hour after the market closes every night and I look at my portfolio and I see, you know, any Schwab or Fidelity account will have all the information you need. You can put it in an order where it tells you what your most profits are, where your profits are. So you get ready to take those profits the next day. You know how much income you have you know how much capital you have that's not invested from yesterday's profits and from distributions that you've received. And you can decide I'm going to buy this, and this, and I'm going to add to this position because I can increase the yield by lowering the average cost. So it takes me about an hour every night to thoroughly prepare for my next morning. You know, I usually go into the market around 9:45, maybe 10 o'clock. After it settles from its initial start, and it'll take me maybe a half an hour to place the orders, and then I'm done for the day, you know, and then I go back to my coaching business and I do that. So I guess I'll go in occasionally to see if all the orders have been executed because I always put limit orders in. I never put open orders in. So I'll double check. And if I see the market has gone up substantially, I'll take another check to see if I have any profits I should take. And the market's gone way down, I might see if I still have enough cash left, maybe add another couple positions, you know? So that's all. It doesn't take a whole lot of time for the average guy to do this himself and to have an income-focused portfolio. and be totally in the market. But the biggest, most important thing, and it's just like in real estate, where you have this, how many, let's say you have 55 different rental properties, and they're all occupied, and you know that income is coming in every month. Well, you know, you almost really don't care what's going on in the market. Even in the real estate market, you don't care. Sure, if we have a major recession and people get out of work, you might not get some rents, but that's got to be a real disaster for that to happen. I mean, even in the Great Recession, the statistics on how many people actually stopped paying their mortgages was almost nil, right? There weren't a whole lot of individuals that defaulted on their mortgages. So you don't have to worry about that. It's the same with the type of structure that I had for my clients. And I told them, a correction is not a problem for you. It's a benefit. I have more opportunities now to take advantage of lower prices and increase your yields on what I'm buying, because I've got this huge income coming in every month. And every month that the market stays down at this level, we get to put that back to work at 8, 9, 10%. I was, you know, when the COVID, we had that really quick downturn in 2020 with COVID, and it went down like crazy. My biggest complaint was that it only lasted for 2 months and then it went right back up again. I mean, yeah, that was good that it went back up, but I only had 2 months of distributions to reinvest in it. And like, whereas in 2022, even up to right now, I've been reinvesting in things yielding 10% for almost 2.5 years. You can't hate that, you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So then, okay, so then you ended up selling your, you had the, oh my gosh, we just went over these numbers. You had the 110 million with clients, 140 or so clients.
Yeah.
Don't hold me to those exact numbers, even though we just talked about it. Then last year you ended up selling your investment management business, right? Mm-hmm. And so walk me through that, like the transition as you kind of transitioned to this next chapter of your life. What, I mean, here you are still hustling, still like coaching people.
Yeah, I just, yeah, I'm so not like, in why? My genes.
Like, what's going on? Yeah.
It's in my genes. I like to be busy. I can't just, you know, I can do crossword puzzle or Wordle or Quirtle, you know, for an hour in the evening before dinner, but I don't want to do it any longer than that. And I don't think anybody can play golf every day, at least not when you're in your 70s, you know? So I really enjoy passing this along to people because you come up with so many blank stares, and people, you see some of the book reviews on Retirement Money Secrets, and they talk about their light bulb moments. All of a sudden this light bulb goes off as they're reading, and they're saying, how come my advisor has never told me about this type of income generation? Why don't I have any of these things in my portfolio? And that's really very satisfying to get that information out there to people. It really is. So yeah, for the first year, part of my deal was that I had to act as a consultant to my existing plant, my old business, to the people there. I had to continue to mentor the woman that I taught how to run the portfolio and continue to get her to be independent, that she could work without me. And she's gotten there, you know, very well. And I had to handle some phone calls for them, you know, if some people needed talking to and so forth. But it was a pretty smooth transition. But during that period of time, I took the time to put everything together and write this book. And that kept me pretty busy for up until October, from May to October, when it was finally published. And I don't want to sound like I'm promoting the book, but doing it with a ghostwriter who was about the age, you know, mid to late 50s, good career, money in the bank, thinking about retirement, and going through the process of talking to her, the book is like a conversation between my wife and I and a couple we meet on a river cruise, and how they paid for it versus how we paid for it, and how what their investments look like versus what our investments. And it was perfect because she was just at that age and that level and had all these questions, never heard of a closed-end fund in her life, you know, never knew what you could do with this type of vehicle versus the mutual funds and ETFs that she had with her advisor and things like that. And it was just, she had those light bulb moments. And we wrote those moments into the book, and it just, you know, and I've had that experience with so many people now who have come to me for coaching, that, you know, it's very satisfying. It's very satisfying, particularly when you've been beaten over the head all these years saying, no, you can't do that. You can't just keep putting in those transactions. You have to let people want to see the green on their monthly statements. They don't want it. They don't need the income that has to pay taxes on it. All these arguments against income investing and against profit taking that you hear in the normal investment advisor spiel, you know, I've had to deal with. And now I know there are a lot of people out there that have seen through that and know that they can generate large amounts of income and not worry about which way the market is going or which way interest rates are going and take advantage of these things, actually. I mean, I get postings in my Facebook groups that say, man, I took my first profit today. I'm so happy. You know, it's like these people are discovering a whole new way of operating within the stock market, within the bond market. You didn't even know the bond market exists for the most part.
What do you think is there any sort of trade-off or negative to your approach versus the more traditional approach?
Yeah, you probably pay more taxes on your individual accounts. You're not going to have those super ego building events where a NVIDIA goes to $1,000 or things like that. You're not going to experience that directly. You're going to get the benefit of it in the closed end funds, but you're not going to actually have that adrenaline rush of when something. I mean, I remember when I used to be investing, and I remember back in the time when remember Boone Pickens and the oil industry back in the 80s, when there used to be dozens more oil companies than there are today, and they all were taking over each other, like ExxonMobil. It used to be Exxon and Mobil, right? There used to be two different companies. Well, during this time, this guy was big in that area, and you'd have all these takeovers, and it was so exciting when you got the news and your mobile stock just went up 25%, and you had it in 37 different portfolios amongst your clients, and you'd say, "You can mobile sell all." You'd yell on the phone, "Sell it all," and then he'd yell out to somebody else, "Sell it all," and they'd, you know, do all the work to sell all that mobile. We take all those profits, and everybody else all excited. So yeah, you're not going to have those type of experiences, but what you're going to have is you're going to have all these clients that never call you ever. I didn't get more than one or two calls in the Great Recession. I didn't get any calls in the dot-com bubble at all. None. Because they knew I wasn't in NASDAQ. I didn't own anything there, you know? So it's just that type of thing. You develop a security, a sense that everything is under control, whether the market goes up or goes down. And I think a lot of people would love to be in that position to say that, you know? And many of them aren't. I've gotten, if you were to look at the portfolios, I don't know, what would you consider a poorly diversified real estate portfolio? You know, would it be a guy who just had one or two rentals or only one? You know, when would you say you're not diversified enough to a real estate investor.
What would I say you're not? You know, what's interesting, Steve, is that's a question I've never gotten. And I mean, I bet you I talked to 5 different people a week for, you know, the last 5 years or whatever it's been. And I think in part because real estate is that diversification from what people are traditionally investing in. I would say probably like once you get to about 100 or 150 of whatever the niche that you have is, you know, it is time to start branching out into other industries outside of real estate.
Outside of real estate. Yeah. But within real estate, like you said, 150. So if you only had one apartment complex with all of your people were in this, what, 4-story apartment building, it would be a lot of different people, but it would be one piece of property and, you know, shit happens, right? You know, so that would be maybe not so great diversification, right? So you have all 100 of them and you're saying, well, now I've got 100 of them. I'm certainly well diversified in my real estate enterprise, but I don't have any interest in this, and maybe I should. Okay. Well, yeah. That's the thing. I'll get a client portfolio where he's got an advisor. It's a managed portfolio, and he'll have 4 different portfolios. You know, IRA for wife and self, Roth, same, a joint account, maybe a trust account. And the same ETF will be in every one. The same funds will be in every one. So, you know, a million or $2 million portfolio with only 15 different securities in it, or a larger portfolio with 3 securities with a total of 3 or 4 million in them. And it's only, there is no such thing as only a $7 million portfolio. I don't mean, you know, but $4 million of it is in 3 different securities, you know? Mm-hmm. And these are managed portfolios by a professional. It just drives, you know, it's not right, you know? So right. you come across a lot of strange things. And I like to feel that I'm correcting a problem when I point out to the person, hey, you know, if they usually send me their portfolio to start looking at before they meet. And sometime I'll send them an email and say, hey, call me right now because there's something I want you to start doing now. We're not meeting for 6 weeks and you want to get this done immediately because it's critical. It's so bad. And, you know, so that, I get these moments that, wow, how could this happen? How could the guy, and sometimes they're not managed. Sometimes it's an inherited amount of money from a relative that they're close to and they don't ever want to sell it because it reminds them of this person. And I say, hey, you know, keep a couple hundred shares, but you know, you don't want to have your whole life tied up in one company like that because that's what it is. Anyway, it's been an interesting gig, I'll tell you. And it almost seems like it's getting better. And and I've been doing a lot of podcasts as well.
Oh, that's great. Well, hey, how do people get a hold of you, Steve?
I like to say that the only way I want to hear from you is if you've read my book, because otherwise the questions are just so many. But anyway, yeah, by reading Retirement Money Secrets. Can you see it?
I see it. Yeah.
That and all my contact information is in there. But I have a website called theincomecoach.net where they can get the story and find out the kind of coaching services and things like that. And they can even hook up with my Facebook group through that website and so on.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, Steve, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. And guys listening in, Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time. Hope you have a great day and take care. All right, guys, that's a wrap. Thanks so much for tuning in. We have a website, passivewealthshow.com, where you can get more great content and resources. We offer a passive profit strategy session, and you can find that on our website as well, where we'll basically ask you a bunch of discovery questions and help you figure out if investing passively is a good thing for you or not. So go to our website, passivewealthshow.com, and we'll go from there.